Hello, I'm Jay Barrett. In this hour of our Spring Membership Drive special programming, I talk with the past owner and the current owner of Trinity Greenhouse on K Beach Road. Darren Henry just bought the business after it being in the hands of founder Ron Sexton for the past 40 plus years. You know, my first question, and it kind of goes back to a question I had kind of forever, but is sort of explained by your big thank you ad in the paper with the Volkswagen. You had Trinity campers.
That's correct, in California.
In California. Tell me about that. That was back in the 70s.
Yes, our camper business started in the late 60s, and I have two other brothers, and all three of us over time bought Volkswagens, and all three of us, independent of one another, made our own design of a camper. And then one time we were having a barbecue, and I talked about some improvements I was going to make, rebuilding my camper and making it better. And something came out about, maybe we ought to try building these and selling them. And so my mother piped up at the time and said, "Don't be a typical Sexton procrastinating, do it." So we did it. And so we opened a camper building business that specialized in Volkswagens. And our design was very unique. It was all removable, so you still had a 7-passenger station wagon putting your middle seat back in, or a van that would then haul 4x8 sheets of plywood. So it was 3-in-1, and that's the name Trinity.
Wow. So were you taking Westfalia bodies, or were you taking regular Vanagon bodies?
Just the regular 7-passenger station wagons, they called them, and we were converting those. And so we would go around putting brochures on the windows of every Volkswagen that needed a camper. And we were very productive that way. But we went to a lot of the big RV shows in L.A. and Anaheim and the Pomona Fairgrounds that had 1,400,000 people go through in 18 days. So that was good exposure for a small family business that was off the beaten path and not dealing with any of the Volkswagen dealers. We were factory direct.
Wow. So I may have mentioned before we went on the air, I used to own a 73 Volkswagen van. It was a factory camper. It was a Westfalia, and I loved that thing. What made you quit wanting to customize Volkswagens?
The state of California.
Ah, okay.
Well, we sent my mother up to Alaska the year before we moved up as a Mother's Day gift, and she came back with 500 slides in a suitcase, what we called propaganda. Her father and brother lived in Anchorage when it was still quite a bit of a tent city back in the early 1900s. And so she knew about the moose and the fishing, and she loved the outdoors and that kind of thing. And so she enjoyed Alaska so much that with some issues with the state of California, we decided, let's go to Alaska for 2 years and see what we think of it. And we've been here 42. Actually, 44, I should say.
Wow.
But 42 years in the greenhouse business.
Now, you said you had two brothers, but only two of you drove up. Is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What happened to the third guy?
Well, he stayed in California. He wasn't involved in the camper business, other than he was sort of helping set up the business, because he was the older brother. He's 8 years older than me and was helping his younger brothers set up a business.
Right. And so that helps explain why Trinity is the three ways to modify or use the van and not three brothers.
Well, three brothers, three ways to modify the van, and plus then our stand on the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. We are Christians.
That was always my first guess. Mm-hmm. And then I found out you had three brothers, and then I saw the van.
All very important information for us, you know, to have in our lives.
All right. So you drove to Alaska, and it was going to be for 2 years. I mean, you decided.
Oh, yes. We made a commitment for 2 years. We weren't going to let the first winter scare us out.
Okay. First, how was the drive? How did your Trinity campers handle the Alcan back in 70-something?
Fine. They entered the Canadian border nice and clean and beautiful looking. And by the time we hit the Alaska border there, they were pretty dirty.
I bet they were.
Oh, yeah.
Man. But they were just fine?
Oh, yeah. We had no problems whatsoever. No flat tires, no breakdowns.
Wow.
Slippery, slimy roads in places. So my wife was driving at the time and almost lost control of the van. I reached over and just sort of corrected it, and we went on down the road nicely. But
So how did you wind up in Kenai, Saldana?
Well, my mother, like I said, had a suitcase full of propaganda. And so she had climate maps and everything. And we knew we didn't want to be in Southeastern because of excessive amount of rain. We knew we didn't want to be in Fairbanks because excessive amount of cold. And so we decided the Kenai Peninsula was where we wanted to go because we didn't want to live in a big city coming from a small farm agricultural community in California. We didn't want to be in a big city. So the peninsula is where we started looking and almost landed on in Homer and looked at getting a building on the spit there to do some cabinet manufacturing and stuff like that, and decided, well, you know, if you're in Homer, you got to have a boat to enjoy that part of the world. And so then we looked at Seward, and of course the same thing over there, and so Soldotna was in between. So if we wanted to go to Seward, it was nice. If we wanted to go to Homer, it was nice. And of course, so we had the Kenai River and all the canoe systems and hiking trails in this area. That was just where we decided to settle down for with our family.
Okay, I have to ask you this. You, this is the early 70s. You're driving a Volkswagen. Were you guys hippies?
Oh, no.
No?
No, no. No hippies. We were hardworking entrepreneurs in prior to the camper manufacturing business. We were in a general contracting business, specializing in framing, but we were doing all the big housing developments out in the Lancaster, California area. We built the first 500 house track out there, but didn't like living away from home, and that's how the camper business stayed in our mind came about. We decided we could work 6 days a week, 12-hour days, and be better off than living out of town and long drives home and being away from the family. So that's how we built the business. We did without and made the thing work and built a very successful little business.
Wow. Mm-hmm. The lure of Alaska and the troubles with the state of California must have really tipped the balance.
Well, see, our design of our camper was done in such a way that most of our designs did not have to be approved by the state of California. There were a few modifications that we did for our customers that required us to have plan approvals through the state. And of course, so like I mentioned, we were going to all the LA RV shows and different places, and they would always come in, the state of California would come in and inspect the facilities and the vehicles that were inside, making sure the gas tanks were all taped up and everything was legit, far as you know, there's the different vehicles had their markings on it. Well, they'd come to us and we didn't have to have those little tags that they wanted us to pop rivet to the side of the vehicle. So make a long story short, one of the last RV shows we went to, they came up and so I sort of said something to the effect, you know, when are you going to learn Trinity Campers doesn't have to, you know, meet these requirements? They said, we know all about Trinity Campers and we're in the process of changing the regulations and you will be complying. And here we are, just a little family business, you know, and enjoying life and working hard and building products that people wanted. And so that was sort of after my mother's trip to Alaska. And so one day we're working in our shop there, and both my brother and I said, you know, we ought to just go to Alaska for a couple of years and see what we think of it.
Wow. So. But that meant giving up your business, right?
Yes, we were just going to shut it down. However, some members in the community found out we were doing that, and one fellow came and approached us about buying the business. And then his brother came over from Phoenix. He was an accountant and looked at the business, and we didn't even have a price established, but they wanted to buy the business. And then we decided, no, we're not going to go to Alaska in the middle of winter, because they wanted to stay at the site there doing training and everything until the first of the new year. And we said, no, we're not going to Alaska in the dead of winter. So we decided not to sell the business, which, you know, hindsight, sometimes you say, oh, yeah, that money would have been nice to have had. But we made it through and we survived, and we're very frugal, very conservative type of individuals. And so now we're where we are now.
All right, and that brings us to Soldotna. What year?
1974, August.
August 1974, you land in Soldotna. What did you do your first summer here?
Well, we were at the River Terrace Trailer Park, and the people that own that came to us one morning. We had our two Volkswagens out there with nine people for two Volkswagens living on the river, the Kenai River. And anyway, Ray Billadu came up and said a friend of his needs help, and you guys are construction people. Would you like to help him? We said, well, we don't have any tools. That's all right. We'll get some tools for you. And so a house out on Forest Drive literally blew up one morning. The fellow flushed his toilet and the house blew up. And long story on that, but it was gasoline that got down into his pressure tank area inside the garage. And when he flushed the toilet, of course, so the pressure tank switch went on and enough of a spark that it blew the house up. So that was the beginning of going back into construction work. And we did general contracting up here and built some custom homes. And where the new fitness place next to Beeman's has been remodified, we built that for Earl Mundell and Dr. Ben Ward's home, custom home, and Earl and Alice Mundell's home, and Dr. David Heiser's home, and some other projects around town. But got into the greenhouse business, just selling residential greenhouses like you saw in the paper, the 8x15.
Mm-hmm.
That was the beginning of seeing a potential of more greenhouse space.
All right, so you guys are contractors, and you were selling greenhouses to people, and then you said, well, why don't we make greenhouses and put stuff in them yourselves?
Yep.
Tell us about that. What were you growing at first? Since you weren't hippies, I know what you weren't growing, I think.
That's correct. well, the first greenhouse we put up, my mother was a very good salesperson. She was our salesperson in the camper manufacturing business, too. And so she was selling the residential greenhouses during the day. And then we would put them together at site if necessary, or in some cases we could pre-build them and put them on the back of our pickup with a rack, special rack that we had, and could deliver them right to the house site. And so the next year we built two more of those size greenhouses that you saw in the newspaper, and along with a glass greenhouse, it was 18 by 22 foot, which the sidewalls were made out of Volkswagen safety tempered glass that came out of the sliding door glass, going back to California now, that we were saving to build a greenhouse in California. We brought all that glass with us, and so we built the glass greenhouse in a windbreak around my home, and I still have two pretty good sized stacks of that glass that I'm going to have to do something with.
Oh man. Well, what kind of plants did you put in the put in the ground the first spring?
Well, in the little greenhouse there, we had a few squash plants and tomatoes and things like that. But then when we added the two more sunglows out in the front lawn and then the glass greenhouse, then we got into bigger tomato plants, begonias, fuchsias, just a lot of different bedding plants, a few vegetable starts. And then we saw the handwriting on the wall. And then the next year, that would have been 77, then we built our first 4,300-square-foot greenhouse. It was 30 by 144 foot.
Wow, so the handwriting on the wall was lots of people want to buy plants.
Yep, potential market, and so we wanted to take advantage of that.
Wow, were there any other nurseries in the area at the time?
Yes, there was one way out in the north road of Kenai, and at one point in time, he was actually operating out of the old Cars grocery store parking lot. And unfortunately, then there was a divorce and he lost his greenhouse. And anyway, he was in and out of business about two or three times in different locations. And ultimately was just down the road from us, the Kenai River Nursery. And then they closed their doors here about, 7 years ago, 6 years, 7 years ago, whatever it is, time flies. And so we had other competition in the area, but we're just hardworking folks and take great passion about whatever we are doing that's before us at the time, whether it was contracting in California or camper manufacturing or general contracting up here or the plant business. It's just who we are as individuals. We take full interest and devotion to what we have in front of us at the time.
Boy, it sure seems that way. How did you decide to, did you guys have a natural green thumb, or did you develop that along the way, or?
Well, my dad was born in Kentucky, and both my grandfather and my grandmother's families had farms back there. One of them was a 400-acre farm and was in the family until 1984, when the last great aunt of mine passed. It went into other people's hands. But it was in the family for well over 200 years. And so my dad was used to farming and running a team of mules and that kind of thing. And eventually, when he finally arrived in California and married my mother, then there was chickens in the backyard and, you know, Victory Garden, because that was the time of our history that Victory Gardens were very important. And I barely remember the chickens and the garden, because it wasn't long after that that the economy was really starting to roll good. And the chicken house, I remember, was very old, and it was very easily taken apart. It was ready to come down. But my brother Dan went off to junior high and took a class that they called Agni Torture. And so that summer vacation, he came home, and, you know, for the vacation, obviously, we had time to spend together. Dan is 3.5 years older than me, but we've been, you know, I guess joined by the hip, you might say. We've done so many things together. It's quite an experience. Lifelong experience still is. Anyway, he wanted to grow, you know, some radishes and carrots and whatever else. And so I got exposed to that. And over time, I ended up with some big gardens. And even after I was married, I was living in a small cottage area. My brother had one of them. My mother had one across the way from me. And then I had one. And here's this about a 40 by 40 area. And I approached the owner of the land. I said, I'd like to put a garden in. Do you think you could allow me to do that? Oh, yeah, here's a Troy belt. Go for it. You know?
Man,
so that was the beginning of actually growing and enjoying the plant and having, you know, a passion for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we came up here, we were already planting a big garden. I had a quarter acre garden taking care of my family. And
wow.
And
what's your favorite plant?
Oh, that's a tough one. There's so many beautiful plants out there. I mean, I love dahlias. I love roses. And like if those people that have come in our greenhouses, they've seen the orchid cactuses that we grow and huge blooms. And I love it all, really.
I was standing next to the orchid cactus just the other day when I was talking with Darren. It's an impressive plant.
Oh, yes, it is.
I had no idea they even existed, really. But the roses, there was a giant pink one about the size of a soup bowl or something, a tureen perhaps, but it smelled just like that rose oil that you can buy. It's just incredible. Well, what's your favorite vegetable that you grow?
Well, I like potatoes. in fact, when we had our full garden going, I was growing about 1,500 pounds a year for my family. And to this day, my son will not look at potato soup. He wouldn't look at fish either. And like chicken, but would shy away from it because those are the three main things that we lived on, and broccoli. Of course, he likes broccoli still, but and always did. But
I can relate. I grew up out in Dillingham. And we had salmon three meals a day, 365 days a year. And it took me well into adulthood before I looked forward to eating salmon again.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, this sort of brings us, I'm going to ask you more about the ensuing 40 years here, but I don't want to ignore Darren over here much. It's clear that you have the passion. You're talking about your passion for all of these things. You seem to have found a guy who, I'm guessing, shares your passion.
Most definitely.
Tell me about how you found Darren here.
Well, Darren's history actually goes back to Solotna High School swim team. He was 1 year ahead of my son. And I was very involved with videoing the swim meets that they would go to, except Juneau and Kodiak and Fairbanks. But all the other ones I would be at. And so I've got him in swims, a lot of swims, talking about personal records and, you know, how well he's doing. And just the whole team, I highlighted all the team members and narration on it and just had a ball doing that. And so that's where I knew Darren from, but also his family attended our church, Solotna Bible Chapel. And so we knew each other through that gathering of people. And so Darren went off to college, and then Eric, his younger brother, went up to UAA. And make a long story short, mom and dad had moved back down into Oregon, and so I sort of lost track of both of them. And here about 2.5 years ago, Eric shows up and says, "Are you interested in selling your business?" And I said, "A matter of fact, I am." And
Wait, now this is Darren's brother.
Younger brother.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so then the next thing out of his mouth was, "Well, my brother and I internally said, oh, good, two. Not just one, but two." But unfortunately, Eric had a severe accident 2 years ago, this last January, and is dealing with that for a long period of time, I'm sure, in his life ahead. And so Darren came up to me about 4 months after that accident and says, "Is there any way that I can do it?" And I said, "Well, let's just work towards that." And so he did work towards that. He showed me his ability to step up and do whatever is needed. In fact, right at the beginning, he was down on his hands and knees scrubbing the floor around the checkout stand that desperately needed cleaning up before we started our greenhouse season, and a lot of other things. And he's a mover. He's very smart, hard worker.
How long ago was this?
I started on with the greenhouse in January of 2016.
Oh, okay. So a little over 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, the first day I think I scrubbed the floors around the check stand, and then I think I cleaned the capture pit for the cleaning station where all the fine, you know, debris off the pots and trays gets washed into and smells a little bit foul. And Ron was like, "Are you sure you want to do that?" I said, "It's got to be done, right?" So
that was a big check mark in my mind for him.
We'll see how he does on the pit of stink here.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's not as bad as a fat trap, but it has its own odor.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, boy. Well, what made you want to get into greenhouse? Did you go to school for agriculture or horticulture or anything like that, Darren? Or
no, I didn't. My mother is was raised on a farm, and her family was made their living off of agriculture. So my mom grew up with sort of that hard scrabble, you know, farming value. So as we were able as kids, my mom, you know, tried to have gardens. Sometimes, you know, my father was in the military, so we moved fairly often, and sometimes we were in base housing, and so gardening wasn't always possible, but wherever my mom could, you know, she always had a plot. I remember we living in California, and she was really excited to be living in California because she could grow tomatoes outside. That was kind of a novel idea for someone that had been living in, Alaska and cold parts of Washington. And so she planted tomatoes, and I remember we ended up having buckets and baskets, and we had a sign out on the street giving them away. She had gotten a little overly rambunctious with the tomatoes. So I grew up with some gardening, I think as far as it concerns Trinity, I've always been drawn to that business. I think the reputation that Trinity Greenhouse has had in the community, the work that Ron and Dan and Kathy and Julie, their wives, put in, it's a special place, and it has a special reputation. Customers who adore the business. I tell people almost every day, it's working up front with the public in the greenhouse business is a true joy. I'm grateful that I get to do that, and I don't have to work at, no offense to anybody that works at the DMV, but, the customers in the DMV don't necessarily want to be there. But when people walk through the door at Trinity, they're excited and happy to be there, smile on their face, excited to see what we have out to offer and how the plants look. And that's a real joy. I know Ron shares that too. It's one of the best parts about the business is that. And then just the sense of success of walking through a greenhouse and seeing it full of things that, you and your staff have worked so hard on, and seeing it thriving and doing well. And so we're we're plant nerds. I get excited about, you know, our fuchsias. People tease me about that, but there's a lot of work goes into growing fuchsias and some of the other crops that we raise. And so, yeah, passionate about that. But, you know, no college degree, no formal education. I think in some respects, it's almost a plus, to come in and learn the business, the way, you know, the way Ron and Dan had grown the business, what they had done to get it to this point is what I've learned about it. And that's, I think that's the right way to do it.
How old of a fella are you?
45.
Okay.
Yep.
You look much younger.
Well, thank you. yeah. 45, father of five children spanning from 24 to two. And, my family's involved in the business as much as possible. And that was an important thing. Both Eric and I had wanted for our families to be involved in something like this. And so that's going to happen for my family to be a, you know, a daily part or at least a regular part of the business each day. A lot of the customers come in and see me holding my two-year-old and, you know, understand that it's a family-run business and they're going to be there and be a part of that.
I imagine, you know, when you're talking about people, you know, they're happy to walk into a nursery, right? You know, instead of walking into the dentist's office or the DMV or something they're not looking forward to. I mean, they just must be, oh, yeah, there's the owner holding his little kid, you know, and over here scrubbing out the things and everything. It's really a mellow place. First of all, it smells great.
Yes, it does.
Right? You know, people walk into a nursery and it just smells terrific.
Yep.
And there's just something about that I think takes, you know, even non-gardeners and non-greenhouse people, you know, to a place where they feel good. I think there's something about that, the richness of the soil and the fragrance from the flowers and leaves that I think everybody responds to.
Oh, absolutely. We didn't do it this year, but I know in years past, we've put out a bowl of potting soil for people to, in the early part of the season, to come put their hands in and smell. It's, you know, I think, you know, and you spend 6 months out of the year looking at snow. I think the mind and the body, you know, crave walking in and seeing something green and smelling the smell of soil. And, you know, as the season comes along, it'll, you know, the rose house even now smells terrific when you step out into it. So, I think people crave that. I mean, we have a lot of people that just, you know, I'm not ready to plant yet, but I needed to see something green. We hear that daily. So
all the time.
Oh, I bet. We'll take a quick break here to give our listeners a chance to support KDLL, which is, after all, listener-supported. Give us a ring at 283-8433 or go online at kdll.org to contribute. I'll be back with Ron Sexton and Darren Henry in just a few minutes. And we're back, talking with Ron Sexton, the former owner of Trinity Greenhouse, and Darren Henry, the brand new owner. I've always wondered what goes on in the winter there.
Work.
Yeah?
Work.
That's my favorite question is, do you guys close in the winter? And I always, it just makes me, you know, like, you must just go on vacation, or no. You know, the first thing I do is point at our petunia crop and say, we seeded those in November, the first day of November. So that kicks off our growing season for the next year.
How do you keep those greenhouses warm? I mean, keeping a glass building warm has got to be.
Instar loves us.
Yes. Yes.
It's what?
Instar
loves us. They love us. All of our buildings.
HEA loves us too that time of the year because we're putting out electricity, you know, through our ventilation system to get the heat where it needs to go. Keeping things from getting too high humidity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. We only heat one of the greenhouses throughout the entire winter, and that's the main retail greenhouse that you enter into when you come into the property there. And we keep it nominally heated enough to keep the roses and some of the plants that we winter over from freezing. And then some of the workspaces towards the back of the building that are, we keep those heated as well, and we work in those spaces. You know, building maintenance, you know, there's a, some degree of building maintenance and plant care, and then we spend a lot of the winter, you know, September, October, all the way through February, putting together, you know, orders for everything from seed to trees and perennials, all the material that we're going to sell for the next season. So we spend a lot of time doing, you know, analyzing what we've sold, what we have on hand, and what we need to get through the next season. There's a lot of components and a lot of suppliers. So we stay very, very busy. It's a full-time job for sure year-round. And we will have typically two or three people on the property every day year-round.
Wow. How many people, over the course of a year, how many different people do you employ?
Well, I think last few years we've had about 17 people at the peak. Some of those are, you know, younger people that are helping with customer service and that kind of thing, so they may not be working full-time, but maybe two people taking a full-time aspect of a position. Sometimes we have to look at that as a schedule and fill one position with two, sometimes three people.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure. Over the years, I saw this in your ad. You thank the hundreds of people that have gone through there. It must be hundreds and hundreds over the years.
Of customers coming through?
Employees.
Employees.
Yeah, temporary.
We've had a lot of employees over the years. And some, you know, just for 2 months during the transplant and session, and for whatever reason, they may not want to come back the next year, so we have to find somebody to fill that position again. One of our employees was with us, which I made note was 28 years.
And what was her name?
Barb Kistler. Mm-hmm. Her side of the family, her mother and father owned Snug Harbor Seafoods out on, can't remember the name of the island, but it was out across the inlet, out of my mind for some reason. So they were in the fishing industry. She grew up in that, worked in all stages of the cannery operation, was very much used to production type of work. And so the plant business is the same thing. It's, you got to be productive if you're going to make it profitable. And so you got to really produce. And so she was an extremely hard worker. And her attitude was, I should be paying you to work here.
Wow.
She said that I don't know how many times over the 28 years she said that to us. But that was her attitude. And she worked and she performed and loved plants and really could count on her every year to be back. In fact, she lived, I think, 11 years in Washington and came up every summer to work for us.
Oh, no kidding.
She kept it going, right? Even though her husband was working down there.
Wow.
And so, you know, that was a dedication that you don't normally find in employees. There's mm-hmm. some really good ones out there. But being a seasonal business, it's hard. And you understand people, a lot of times we'll have a 16-year-old come on as customer service. And then as they learn and they show their value and their worth, pretty soon they're transplanting, starting to take care of plants, doing watering, which is the most critical job there is on the property. And working at the counter, taking care of customers as they learn the plant material and they listen to myself or my wife or my brother and his wife when they were on board of how to answer people's questions and have that knowledge. So you find those kids, and sometimes you have them for 2 to 3 years, even sometimes 4 years of their college years too.
Oh, wow. You said something in passing there. Is your brother and sister-in-law, did you buy them out or they're not involved? And
I bought my brother out. He had some health issues going on in 2005, so I became sole owner. Our agreement in the buyout was he would work for me for 2 more years, and he worked 8 years beyond that because he still had his heart and soul in the business and loved the clients, but he was working in the germination, seeding and germination and plant care of the plugs and the baby plants, which is what I'm doing now.
Ah, so, excellent. Right, because I understand Darren told me the other day that you're going to stay on for a little while.
2 years or longer, depending on whether he wants me more than that or whether I want to go more than that. Because my brother, he was, how old would he have been then? I think he was 65. Well, I'm 72, so I'm way down the road further than him. So,
oh, boy. But, can I ask you some nitty-gritty questions about growing plants?
Sure.
Why can't I grow tomatoes? I'm horrible at it. I put them in the window, I water them, I turn up the heat, but I walk into your place and there's a million tomato plants just sitting there mocking me. What's the secret?
Part of it is the potting soil you might be using. The Master's Mix is a premium potting soil. We put a lot of money into it. Because that's what we want to grow in. So what we sell out the front door is exactly what we grow in ourselves. Then the care of the plant, not overwatering, not letting things dry down and go the other way. There's a balancing. And every plant has its own desirable moisture content. Some like to stay a little on the drier side. Some like to be on the more moist. Most fall in between that. So it's learning when to water and when not to water. Also, the food, feeding your plants on a regular basis. You mentioned having it probably in your home. Too close to a window can be too hard on a plant because the solar heat is much more intense coming off of that glass than it's back. The edge of the plant might be back at least a foot, if not more, away from the window. You're going to have a much cooler condition than if it's right up against the window. Especially tomato blooms, they don't hold up from that type of heat right close to the window. They just wither right up. They're too delicate.
I think that's my problem. Yeah. I always thought they needed lots and lots of warmth.
Too much warmth and not enough light will cause them to stretch out to find more light. So they become very spindly and weak. So early in the year, you might have it on the south window that gets some light, but then it's got so much darkness, but then the room is still warm from your heat. Then they want to find more light because they're warm and they want to grow.
Ah, you have just solved pretty much every one of my tomato problems, I think.
Well, and then the other thing on getting tomatoes to set is pollinating them. You have to hand pollinate by shaking the blooms. Some people use a little pencil to tap the bloom cluster lightly on the stem, not on the blooms themselves, to sort of shake it. Ideally, between noon and 2 o'clock is the best time to do it when the air is dry. Of course, in a home, the air is going to be drier anyway than it would be if it's in a greenhouse. But if it's early in a greenhouse or late in a greenhouse, the humidity could be up to where then the pollen is clumpy and you're going to get a deformed tomato if it sets a tomato.
Wow. So I have to do that at home with my home tomato plants?
Oh, yes.
Yep. You don't have any insects in your home working those plants over, mm-hmm. So something's got to help the pollination. So.
Huh.
And insect-wise, there's really only one thing that will really work tomato blooms, and that's a western bumblebee. And when we were commercially growing tomatoes, we would bring those in as hives and have those working. But if there was pollen outdoors, which one year we planted a lot of our master's bouquet across the front of our property, and the next thing I know, all my little workers are departing the greenhouse, and I can tell they're not working on my blooms because I don't see the little micro damage that they do to each and every bloom. And they're coming back with this nice, bright orange pollen on their legs and going back in their hive. And I said, that's not tomato pollen because it's very light yellow.
Oh, boy.
So that's why you need to hand pollinate your blooms.
Yeah. Well, see, I didn't even know about that. I figured they were... they took care of themselves somehow. No. Okay, I have another question. Corn. Is it possible to grow corn in a greenhouse? Somebody told me you can't grow it very well in Alaska because we have too much sunlight.
No, you can grow corn. I've grown lots of corn in my cold frames.
Ah. What's the technique for that?
Well, you need to start them. We start ours in 6-packs. And then we move them into the ground, and they're probably already up about 18 inches, 16 inches at that point in time, very well rooted out. And so then when you plant them very much deeper into the ground. But you just need a cold frame to keep the cool air off of them. In fact, I've got what, if you're ever at the greenhouse in our lilac house, I have that type of a structure at home, which I haven't used in a number of years because I'm working too much at the greenhouse, but 24-foot square type of structure, and you can roll the sides up and down if you need to for, you know, helping control the heat a little bit, but I found leaving the corners open all the way around, and the structure was off the ground just a little bit, that gave enough ventilation. It might be a little on the humid side, so sometimes you get sort of a black sooty mold from the pollen that would come off the
smut.
Isn't
that what it's called?
Well, and that's usually caused from a contamination. That can be from aphid honeydew, and then the black smut will come in. But pollen laying on the leaves that doesn't get washed off from rain or blown off from wind, then it will do the same thing in a high humidity. You can grow corn. I've grown. In fact, one year when I had a little farmer's market at my greenhouse, because I had my big garden still going and I was harvesting lettuce and beets and everything, carrots, all that stuff. And one year we were behind on processing our corn, so I just picked a bunch of corn one year and took it down to the shop, greenhouse there, and offered it on a Saturday, and it was gone, you know. next weekend rolled around, yeah, you got any more of that corn? I said, no, matter of fact, I got in deep trouble for harvesting that corn. My wife was not very happy with me. I'll never do that again. They won't see any more corn.
Oh, boy. And I tell you,
it was good.
I bet, yeah. I remember the very first time I tried corn fresh off a stalk. It was my first year in college. I went to Bellingham, Washington, where my aunt and uncle lived, and she had a garden, and it had corn in it. And this was the end of August, and it was ready. And I went and I grabbed. She said, "Well, how many do you want?" I said, "I'd probably eat two." She said, "Grab four for yourself." Okay, yeah. So I grabbed four, and darn if I didn't eat four. It was just incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Man. So when you plant corn, can you just grab a cob from Safeway and stick it in the ground?
No.
A little more involved?
It doesn't quite work that way. Now, if you took that corn and it was mature enough, and then you dried it, and then you could pull it off the cob and plant the individual seeds, yes.
Ah. You know, I saw a packet of seeds at the store, multicolored. Mm-hmm. I didn't open it up. I didn't buy it. I didn't look at it, but.
That may not be the best eating corn out there, but it's very colorful as far as ornamental aspect in the fall of the year.
Oh, right. Let me ask about all the years while you were growing the business. Were there some plants that you wanted to grow? You know, something, I don't know, maybe from back home or a tree or, you know, maybe... A fruit or a vegetable that you wanted and you tried and it wouldn't work, so you had to move on? Or was there anything that you couldn't make grow here? Or you were surprised that you could?
Oh, nothing's coming to mind. Outdoors, you know, there's lots of things that, like maple trees, for example. There's maples that are hardy. Some people down Homer have a little bit better luck with maple and then getting color out of them. Because it usually takes a long fall for the leaves to change and develop those colors. Sometimes here we get cold quicker, and so our fall is very short, and so we don't see the color. But I know I have a lot of people wanting to see that color because they're from New England or whatever, and they want that look up here. And some years we can have pretty good fall colors, but a lot of times it's pretty short, 2 weeks, and the leaves are gone, and that kind of thing. But, you know, you can really grow just about anything if you have the right conditions. And, you know, like the tomatoes and cucumbers ideally should be grown in a controlled greenhouse environment so it doesn't get on tomatoes, you know, higher than 75. We try to have 70, 72 as a temperature. You get up over 85, then the pollinization is going to be damaged because the pollen's going to be bad. If it's too cold, like 55, same thing. Pollen's going to move so slow, it won't have time to pollinate the ovary of the tomato. And so 60 is your minimum nighttime temperature. And the Sweet Success cucumber that we like growing, that's so productive, can handle that 60 degree night temperature like the European, though they like really 70 at night and 80 during the day. Well, the Sweet Success falls more in line with the tomatoes, and so that's why it's a good cucumber for up here.
Wow.
But you can grow just about anything you want. We've got, you know, lime trees growing.
Wait, what?
We have a couple lime trees.
Yeah. Some key limes.
Actually.
Growing in the back of the greenhouse there.
Really? Are they for sale?
No.
Darn.
They're a pet project. And we get one or two limes off of them every year.
Yeah, we've had a little bit more problem with them last few years. We've got a couple of grapefruit trees growing that one of my previous employees gave me two or three seedlings. They were sprouting within the grapefruit, so we got them planted up and finally brought them to me. Here, you do something with them. So I grew them, and now they're, about four and a half foot tall right now.
Wow. When I lived in Kodiak, before I moved back here, I ordered a Meyer's lemon sprout, and I don't know, I got it up. It had a few leaves on it and stuff, but I didn't have enough sun where I lived, and I just gave it to a friend when I moved back here, and I don't know how it's doing now, but wasn't doing real good when I left it. So
that's how I ended up with the lime tree. Here, do something with this. In fact, I offered it back to the fellow that gave it to me. He says, no, I don't want it.
Man. So tell me about the lime tree. You're what are you doing with it now, Darren?
Well, we have two of these key lime trees. Going, and they're just ornamental. They're just for fun. It's a pet project. They're one of the things that you'll see at Trinity, and it drives some people crazy. We know is they'll see things in the greenhouse that they'd really like to take home, but they're for partly for the atmosphere that we want to create at the greenhouse, and so that goes for some of the roses. We have some varieties of roses that are hard to find. And that we've held on to just as, just as things for people to come in and enjoy, rather than, sell those things off. So, I'd say the lime trees, the grapefruit, those are just pet projects or things we enjoy growing and showing people what's possible. We have an optimal growing environment. So some of the things that we're growing thrive in our environment because of the care and the light that they're getting in our facility. Might be hard for the average homeowner to replicate in some cases. And in most cases, that's anything's possible if you're willing to spend the time and the money to do it. And I'm a firm believer that there's really no such thing as a green thumb. I think everybody can grow plants. And that includes my wife, who for a time there killed house plants on the regular. She, like everyone else, can learn to take care of plants and enjoy gardening, either in your home or in your yard. And so, that's the attitude that I take. And I know that Ron takes, that people just, it's not an issue of, there's nobody that's inherently, gifted at gardening. They're willing to learn, pay attention to what they're doing, and try something and see how it works and then change tactics if that's needed. And that's really the essence of, of gardening and growing. Even in a commercial scale at Trinity, we'll try something just to see how it goes. And sometimes it goes quite well, and sometimes it doesn't go very well at all. I think that's just a part of that natural curiosity and passion for growing that I think anybody can have and develop that skill. It's really what it is. It's a skill. It's not something that you're inherently born with. I firmly believe that.
Well, and a person that has passion about life too, life is experiences of challenges, and it's stepping up to those challenges and then trying to learn what it takes to achieve success in those areas. And that's why we have worked hard over the many, many years, 42 years, of developing a relationship with a community, of helping them solve their problems with plants and answering their questions. And many times we'll get phone calls, and my attitude has always been, if I don't know, I will try to research it out and get back with you. And when I call the people back, they said, oh, we didn't think we'd ever hear from you. And I said, no, if I say I'm going to do something, I follow through on it. There's been a few exceptions where I've lost a note, and now I can't call those people because I don't have the information. But that's been very rare. But we feel that's an important part of our business, is to help people have success in their home gardening.
Yep. Sure, sure. What's the strangest question or problem you've ever faced from somebody?
Well, I had a fellow call me one time, and it turned out to be a long phone call. And he says, yeah, he says, I've got this palm tree, and it's not looking good. And I'm not sure what the problem is. And so we started to, well, what kind of problem is it? Blah, blah, blah. You know, and he, so he starts giving me information, and I'm asking these questions. And I said, well, how much water are you giving it? And I think he said like a cup a day or something. And I said, oh, okay. And, you know, that may not be enough for the size of the tree. So, you know, what size is it? And, oh, it's about 10 foot or 11 foot, whatever it was. And I said, well, that's not even close to enough water. And then as it turned out, he had already had another palm tree that was in this house too, that was, I think, 12 or 15 feet tall. But he paid a lot of money to have it shipped up during the wintertime. So I think part of the problem was there was some frost, you know, freezing damage done to it too. You know, obviously the gentleman called me and wanted some help, and I tried to help him the best I could. Even though I didn't really have experience with the plant, I started asking basic questions to find out what he's been doing and what the circumstances were, to try to say, oh, well, this is probably where your problem is. So therefore, frost might have been the damage, and the trucking company didn't have keep from freezing service, and maybe they should have, those types of things. So, but we've had a lot of people call on some very unusual things, and we try to the best we can help them with their situations, even though we haven't personally been exposed to it. Earlier on, you asked, you know, about my experience. Neither my brother Dan nor I had professional training in this business whatsoever. We've actually had years ago people involved in the horticultural industry tell us it was probably a good thing we didn't have any training because of the uniqueness of Alaska's environment and lighting and everything else, that we didn't have preset ways of doing things based upon our formal training, that we were willing to experiment and tweak. And I'm always tweaking. I'm always playing and trying to make this crop do a little bit better. What if we, you know, increase the parts per million of nitrogen another 100? What's that going to do? Or maybe, you know, we need to make a little adjustment in something else, or move it to a different location in the greenhouse because it's a little warmer or a little cooler in that section of the greenhouse. So knowing your greenhouse and how the heat works, and where the hot spots are and where the cold spots are, is how you take advantage of your space to its maximum.
Wow, that,
that's... we're always doing that kind of stuff at the greenhouse.
Now, is this all in your head, or do you have notes and maps and temperature gradients? And
well, we've had, like, in one location, we can have three thermometers hanging there because they're not all real accurate. And so we get an average of those things. And Darren now, he's put a lot of electronic or
technology
out to where he can monitor the greenhouses, high, lows, and... I mean, it's quite
monitor humidities and temperatures in different buildings and be able to do it remotely.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
It was one of the things we're always fearful of is having in the early part of the season in February and March, we start heating some of the other greenhouses and putting crops into them. And then it's always a little nerve wracking in March, you know, and you get some of these nights where it gets down below zero and then you have a greenhouse heater not kick on and run properly. Then suddenly you have a crop in jeopardy, and that's something that we deal with every year. You know, this year as well, had one greenhouse heater decide not to work. And so at 2 a.m, I'm hustling over to the greenhouse to cycle it and get it to fire back up. And Ron can relate dozens of stories like that over the years where they've caught a greenhouse not doing what it was supposed to be. So, yeah, it's a part of the Alaskan experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's next for you?
Well, I'm still going to be very interested in what's going on at the greenhouse. My wife and I want to get out and do some things that we've been putting off for years and years. We've been very blessed in many, many ways. We did do a trip a number of years ago to Ireland, and I did a complete slideshow on Ireland at the greenhouse for people to come in and sit down. And we had several people come down and sit down for almost 2 hours watching the slideshow going on, and actually brought some other people back the next day, and the one lady sat through it all again. So, and then New England trip, we've done that, but we've got some plans that we want to do, but just mainly slowing down because the workload, being so owner there and not having a right-hand person, my workload has been just tremendous, as Darren is finding out now. Of course, I'm still there helping guide and help out too, but it's quite an effort to put the show together, so to speak. And but we'll be around. A lot of people say, oh, you're moving out of state, where are you going? No, we're not moving anywhere. We like our home, we like our property, we like our peace and quiet, we like our gardening, you know, that we've got going on ourselves. So
wait, do you live right there at the greenhouse?
No.
Oh, okay. I was thinking, well, what a garden. You got a garden right there.
Well,
at the
my wife says I live there, but which I basically do. I'll be there till, you know, sometimes 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning doing different aspects of the business. So,
wow.
You got to do what you have to do.
Well, gentlemen, thank you both very much for coming in and talking with us. And good luck, Darren, with your future there at Trinity Greenhouse.
Well, thank you. Yep, appreciate it. Appreciate you having us on.
Thank you.
We appreciate this time of sharing with you.
Oh, I really appreciate it, too. We'll have more special fundraiser editions of Your Favorite Shows featuring your friends and neighbors on the Kenai Peninsula in the next hour. Why don't you take this opportunity to go to the phones and make a contribution to support this kind of programming on KDLL? The number is 283-8433.